Welcome to River Talk, the podcast that talks about all things river related, some things not river related. Today we're going to be talking about the International Rafting Federation, and we have a guest whom Zach will introduce shortly. Have some brief news of the week, and from my end, the only news of the week is that the PDX Kayaker Film Fest will be happening this year. That's in Portland, Oregon. We're currently solidifying a date, but it's looking like March 15th, which will hopefully be the Friday before the wind race.
Cool.
To have the film fest to kick off racing season out here in the Pacific Northwest. So more details to follow, but there is a film fest coming. So if you are someone who wants to enter, start working on your edits.
Sweet. Are you organizing it, Priscilla?
I am. Yeah, awesome. It was Next Adventure. And it will also be a fundraiser for American Whitewater again. So
awesome.
Another good reason to come and watch kayak videos and spend your money on beer that will go to a good cause.
Thanks for doing it. Do you have a location yet?
What was that?
Do you have a venue?
That's one of the things we're working out right now. I think I do, but it's not yet confirmed.
Okay.
So, yeah, finding venues in Portland is always fun, especially when you're not making money off of the event.
It's brutal. I did that Wild Rivers Night event you've been to,
and yeah,
we may not do it this year just because I can't find a venue. It's just incredibly difficult.
We should talk about this outside the podcast, but you should email me and we can talk to Keen about that.
Okay, no, I already have.
Oh, yeah, okay, never mind.
Story. So for those of you that haven't lived in the Northwest for a while, or you've just moved here the past few years, this used to be a huge annual event that everybody made videos for. It was attended by hundreds of people. Really fun. It's kind of died off. So Priscilla, thanks for bringing it back. Hopefully it's going to be huge.
Yeah, I hope so.
for my news of the week, just briefly, the snowpack in Idaho and Oregon are not that good. It's kind of a bummer. But I did look at the snowpack for the Oahe, and it's 136% normal. So that's one shining star in our snowpack. I don't know how that happened. So that's good news. And for those, Eric's gone this week. Eric is on the board of directors of the Idaho Outfitters and Guides Association, and he's in a meeting. But I did hear they had a huge breakthrough on that steelhead issue we've been talking about the last couple episodes. So it sounds like that they fixed it.
Yes.
So hopefully Eric can tell us more about that next week. Well, for this week, I want to first introduce our guest. Our guest is Mark Hurst. He's a raft guide instructor, safety instructor. He's from the UK. I'm going to learn more about him this episode, but I'm pretty sure he's from the UK but lives in Finland. And he travels around the world teaching raft guiding and safety courses and is a pretty interesting guy. I read some of his blogs and became fascinated with sort of his philosophy. And so I want to have him on today to talk about the International Rafting Federation and just some safety stuff we've been bantering about on these past episodes. Welcome, Mark.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
And you're right now in Finland?
I am way, way up north, about 200 kilometers inside the Arctic Circle in Lapland at home in Finland.
Oh, wow.
And we have a lot of snow.
I bet.
Yeah.
You're from the UK, right? Are you a citizen of the UK?
I'm working on Finnish residency because you might have heard we've got this whole Brexit thing going on.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get a Finnish passport so I can freely travel around the world.
But right now you have a UK passport.
I have a UK passport at the moment.
Okay. And why Finland?
My wife is Finnish.
That makes sense.
My wife's Finnish. I'm working on it.
Okay.
I can understand more than I can speak.
Uh-huh.
I can raft in Finnish.
Cool.
Very cool.
Well, Mark, how did you get into boating?
Well, I'm originally from Manchester in the UK, and I came from an inner city area, and as part of the school curriculum there when I was seven, for 3 hours per week, we got to go kayaking in a local education center. And I kind of got into it when I was seven and started to hang out at the kayaking center as a teenager. And then when I got to 16, 17, I thought, well, what can I do to feed the addiction to keep me in a kayak? And it's all gone from there, really.
how did you switch from kayaking to rafting?
Let me think. 1998, I went kayaking in Nepal, and we were on the Bodokosi River, and there was a rapid on there at the time called the Wall, and I'd never really spent much time in a raft. And the guy had said, "Here, jump in here and I'll do this rapid with me, because we've got to get the raft. We can't take the customers down." And I got in a raft for the first time. And then spending a season in Nepal, I got to think, oh, wait a minute, I can travel the world, be on the river. And yeah, that's where it's all, where it all started, really. So I went home to the UK and started on my qualifications.
And in the UK, what are those qualifications?
So in the UK, I mean, you can't really... You need qualifications. For instance, you want to go to a local outfitter and hire a kayak, you need to have qualifications. So we have the British Canoe Union, which is probably the same as the ACA. Mm. And they do an amount of personal skills awards called star tests. So you get 1 star, which is paddling on flat water, and 5 star, which is leading on class 4+. Mm. So I did those, and then I got into teaching, and we have the teaching system. So just the same as you guys have got the ACA, we've got the British version. And I did my qualifications for rafting. The British rafting qualifications are very much geared towards rafting in the UK. So a lot of site-specific, working on artificial courses and low-flow rivers.
So the British Canoe Union... It says canoeing in the title, but it manages rafting then, or it organizes rafting training.
If it has a paddle, it comes under the BCU.
Okay.
So SUP, they're slowly starting to get into SUP stuff now, and pack rafting. So yeah, it all comes under the British Canoe Union.
Okay. And I know you're an instructor for the International Rafting Federation. I mean, how does the International Rafting Federation differ from the ACA or the BCU or other countrywide entities?
I mean, obviously being international, it's an international based organization. And basically the IRF have two aspects. One is to promote the racing side of rafting. So you have the various races around the world and the world championships. There's currently one in Australia coming up soon. And then you've got the guide training side of things. And basically, the IRF they want to standardize raft guide training and education around the world. So, for instance, I can travel to a different country. So let's say 1 week I could be in Russia, and then the next week I could be in India. And the IRF guide training system has a series of tests and assessments, so that a guide that gets tested in Russia will be put through, and a guide in India will receive the same assessment as a guide in Russia. So they're trying to standardize raft guide training all around the world.
Is that hard to do? I've guided a few different places. And even in the States, guiding in California doing day trips is very much different than guiding in Idaho doing multi-day trips, which is a whole different beast than guiding in Nepal.
Absolutely. It's a real eye-opener. And... Well, we're lucky, you know, when you think of the guiding world, you think, in my eyes, I tend to think of the New Zealands, the Australia, the States, Canada, Europe. And, you know, it's a very westernized way of thinking. But a lot of the places I travel to, I'm going to places where the countries are underdeveloped countries. So the education of the raft guides is a lot different, and their whole outlook and philosophy on safety and approach to professionalism is a lot different. I'll give you a really good example. I was in Georgia this year, and I was teaching some raft guides who had 20 years raft guiding experience. Mm-hmm. Yet you wouldn't let any of these guys guide on class 2. So it's quite interesting to see all of the different standards around the world. And yeah, it's very hard.
Do you think that we need national, like the ACA, I guess the ACA is a weird example, but do you think that we need the BCU and the IRF? Because the IRF offers overall instruction and the BCU is specific to the country, or is one better than the other?
I think the good thing we have with the IRF now is that the IRF is really starting to become recognized globally. I've been lucky enough to guide around the world, so I've got a collection of RAF Guide awards. My IRF ticket and my New Zealand rafting ticket are pretty much, they're accepted all over the world. I would struggle to get work outside of the UK with a British Canoe Union award. Plus, as well, the courses for the British Canoe Union, you can really only take them in the UK. An IRF course, you can take anywhere in the world.
When you ticket, you mean license?
License is an interesting word. So a lot of the, let's say that the former Eastern Bloc countries, they like to call it a license, whereas the IRF test it's a statement of competence. So it means you've taken a test on maybe class 3 water, so you've been assessed on class 3 water, and all IRF courses, workshops, each guide has to demonstrate certain competencies. For example, a safety talk, their personal rafting ability, swimming, throw bagging, some rope work, and various other little aspects. And at the end of that, an IRF award is a statement of competence. It's not a license.
I really like that. I think one of the issues that I used to teach whitewater rescue in at a university in Oregon, and I felt like a lot of the they would be called certifications, but for all things considered, people would consider them a license of sorts. And I felt like it was not giving enough credit to some of the people who were more competent and giving too much credit to people that should have barely passed the class.
Yeah.
And I think having like a statement of competencies and is more honest as to what the skill set is, where having a raft guide license doesn't necessarily mean you're the most competent. It just means you made the bare minimum to pass, at least in some of the courses for the U.S.
And from my experience, countries that require you to that give out a RAF guide license, the people that normally administer this test are people who work on the sea and their coast guards, and they want you to carry an anchor and flares inside the raft. All that crazy stuff.
Yeah, or a float cushion instead of a throw bag.
You must have light lights on your raft if it's over 6 meters.
That's insane.
Yeah.
We have that same thing here in Oregon, Idaho. We're licensed, but it literally is just paperwork and doing silly things like carrying your first aid cards with you. And it's not actual competency. It's just a bureaucratic mess.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose for me, working around the world, if you're going to go and take one country where everything is switched on and they're good, New Zealand. You know, in New Zealand, it's a license and it's administered by people that know what they're doing.
Through the government or through an organization like the International Rafting Federation?
In New Zealand, you can use the International Rafting Federation. It's always accepted. But if you go to work there, you have to have their awards and then you have to be tested by one of their assessors. So they definitely they'll take it into account that you've got an IRF qualification, but they'll still test you to their standards. And what I think is really good, all of the top New Zealand assessors are also IRF assessors as well, which is nice.
New Zealand has some things figured out.
Yes, definitely. They are leading the way.
That's awesome. So something that I think for so many reasons, it's great to standardize training for not just rafting and kayak guiding and teaching, but just in general. And as we know, the U.S. is really bad at falling into line with standards of the rest of the world. Do you, in your experience so far, do you think that there would be a real possibility of the, or at least parts of the U.S. where, you know, guiding and teaching is so much more prominent, like the West Coast? Do you think there's a real possibility that something like the IRF would be adopted as a primary competence test for guides? Or do you think it's just going to be, like most things, a struggle, and it's, you know, it's probably a better option, but it's going to be hard to get people to adopt it?
It would be nice in a perfect world. It would be nice to have IRF courses run. You know, it would be nice. It'd keep me in work. I think the more people we can get on board with the IRF and using these tests, I think the better. My experience of dealing and working with American RAF guides is the guides that tend to come off from the West Coast. I've worked with a lot of guides from Coloma in California. Is those guys tend to be pretty switched on. They'll travel overseas and they'll try and get work. And, you know, maybe they'll come to Europe and they'll get asked, what qualifications have you got? And a lot of them will go, a lot of them will say, oh, I've got my Rescue 3 SRT, or I've got my White Water Rescue Technician, but that's just a certificate in river rescue. It's not a certificate in actually being able to physically guide a raft. So I think from the West Coast, I think there's a lot of guides that travel around the world from the West Coast. And I think a way for the IRF to get its foot in the door is to say, hey, if you're going to go traveling and try and get work overseas, put yourself through an IRF assessment.
That's a really good point.
I think as well, a lot of people, you get a lot of guides that have been in the industry for a long time. And, you know, they may have been guiding for 10, 15 years. And to turn up and say, now we're going to test your rafting ability. A lot of guides, they're typical alpha male raft guides, they'll puff their chest. What are you going to teach me? And, you know, going on the work and simply doing a workshop, you know, not necessarily to get a license or a certificate at the end of the workshop, but just, you know, for a little bit of learning. If you're working with a guide that has a lot of international experience, you're going to get to see what's happening around the world. A lot of countries that don't have the IRF or don't take advantage of the IRF, their community is very closed. So something that they've been practicing for 10, 20 years, it could be quite out of date. And then some fresh blood, some new people come in and show them something new and they learn. That's also the benefit of the IRF training as well. And then also we can learn from these closed communities and take some of the things that those guys are doing and take them and spread them around the world.
I totally agree. We're hosting Mark for a class next spring, and I've talked to a lot of my friends about joining. You know, hey, I'm going to do this workshop. Do you want to join? And they're all like, what can you teach me? I mean, I'm a 10-year guide. I've got to hear, here, and here. And it's like, what can I get from that? And I think that getting that experience, like you said, from around the world and new ideas and new thoughts is really powerful. You know, I don't think it's necessarily about teaching like how to particularly run an individual rapid or river, but more about a general philosophy of guiding that's evolved over time. And we're kind of training ourselves here in the U.S. or on specific rivers, so we're kind of breathing our own smoke and not like opening up to new ideas and new philosophies.
Yeah.
I think for me, one of the key head turners with the IRF system is that we offer a safety kayak, certification system. So we've recognized the fact that IRF that safety kayaking is actually a role and a profession in its own. So we have a set of assessments for safety kayakers. So people that work as commercial safety kayakers on river trips can come and do a safety kayaker class 2, class 3, or class 4 test. And I've taken some world-class kayakers, ex-world freestyle championship kayakers. For instance, Eric Southwick, former US freestyle champion. I've worked with Eric for years. And, you know, this guy is an amazing kayaker. He's been through. He's won the world championships. He's done several first descents. And I work with his company quite a lot in Thailand. And he said at the end, he's done stuff on an IRF safety kayak course that he would never have dreamed of doing before. I can name lots of world-class kayakers that I've worked with that have done this test that have benefited, that have at least taken one little piece of gold, one little nugget out of the course that they can take away and use. So if they're going to learn something, you know, at least they're going to pick something up.
Yeah. I think that's a super, I'm just thinking about all the times guiding in Oregon, California, and Idaho when I would be thinking about, well, maybe next summer I'll try to do something abroad or you know, whatever. And lots of my friends did. And some of the colleagues I had that worked in Banks, Idaho, were very international guides. And just thinking, if I knew when I first started guiding when I was, what, like 18, if I had this sort of certification, it would make it easier for me to go to different countries and guide and be on rivers. I think that would have been a really neat thing that could have been offered at the university in lieu of maybe some of the ACA courses that were more promoted and really expensive and time consuming, but only valid in the US.
Yeah. So the power of it, you know, I because I work in the industry, I have a lot of guides that, you know, will take a course with me in one country, and I'll go to another country and a company will say, we're really desperate for guides this year. Mm-hmm. I can say, I can put you in touch with guides. I can hook you up with guides who have been through a test, have done a course. And then the incoming guide, the company that the guide is going to, they know exactly what that guide has been through.
Yeah.
Some of the IRF, something we're promoting as well is that we also like the guides to keep an up-to-date logbook.
Mm.
So with any IRF test, they have to provide an up-to-date logbook of their river experience, which also helps when you're going to work internationally.
Yeah. So on the other side of things, just thinking about being a traveling customer, do you think that there's a, like a marketing value to companies you were saying that some countries require this certification, so people who live there might know they're getting the guide that they pay for. But would you say there's potential for a marketing value for companies like Zach catering to international travelers saying, my guides have gone through IRF? Do you think they would know that what that means? Or do you think that that's kind of something that it'll grow into, that like in the US there's like Yelp reviews or endorsements? Like, could it be an endorsement that adds and brings more traffic to companies?
Well, it's already live and working countries in the developing countries. For instance, you know, I just previously mentioned Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a lot of local yeehaw companies on the river. There's one company on the river. All of their guides are IRF certified. We have a process in place with the IRF that if all of the guides in your company are certified, it means you're allowed to use the IRF logo on your website and your advertising
material. Nice.
So then there's also plans in the pipeline to actually have IRF certified companies.
Wow.
So I think a lot of people definitely, I can talk about my wife in general. Before we go somewhere, she will research a company. She'll look at the TripAdvisor and stuff like that. And she's looking. She might not understand what the international accreditations are, but, you know, people are looking. And to have that logo sat on your website is definitely going to help. One of the jobs that I do within the IRF, and it's not one of the nice jobs that I have to do, is a lot of companies will use the IRF logo for advertising to say all of our guides are qualified to IRF standards, when in fact the guides are not qualified. So I have to do a lot of research with the companies there and work with the companies that are falsely using the IRF logo.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
And since that is such a benefit for companies, and you've traveled around the world, if you were just telling a broad audience of people that are like, what are the safest countries or most reliable countries to go if I wanted to do a rafting or kayaking trip? Could you think of a top few that you'd recommend to someone that's the only information they wanted?
So if I was to send my mother rafting, where would I send them?
Exactly.
I think I would definitely be sending her to New Zealand. She'd definitely be going to the UK. In the UK, they're super nervous about this whole suing culture. So the amount of safety that's put in place is quite tight. So I'd definitely say in New Zealand, UK. There's some very good companies out there in Nepal. There's a couple of good companies in northern India, Ladakh, to name a few. I couldn't necessarily give countries, but I can definitely give you rivers and companies. Switzerland. Switzerland's got very good standards.
Are there any countries where everybody has to be IRF certified to guide?
There are countries where it is, it's in the legislation. Whether that happens or not is two totally different things.
Yeah, takes a while.
There are countries that will have their own domestic rafting award schemes, and they will accept IRF. So, for instance, if you go to Austria and you have an IRF award system, an IRF award certificate, you can. It's the same as the Austrian system, so you can get a job. There. So it's accepted in Austria, UK, lots of places around Europe. And then going into the developing countries, if you go in to a country that doesn't have any type of system in place and you say you have an IRF award, it's perfect.
Nice. So if you were someone trying to book a trip internationally, you could look for the IRF certification and kind of do like what you're saying your wife does, the Yelp review process. And if you think it might not be true, you could probably check in with the IRF / check in with Mark and see if they're legitimate before booking your trip.
There's an area on their IRF website that has some approved operators.
Awesome.
So as a company that has all IRF, all their guides are IRF guides, those companies are listed on the IRF website.
That's great. I think that's a great resource. I want to move on to something a little bit different from that, but just talking about the cost of certification. And in the U.S., at least in my limited experiences on the West Coast, I know getting all these certifications cost me thousands of dollars. And there's not, I think the company I worked for helped do some of these trainings, but for most companies, that's not, they're not making that much money. They're small outfitters and they can't pay for certifications for all of their guides. And that might limit the type of people that you could have working for your company. Is that something that, I'm not sure what the certifications cost on the IRF. That's my disclosure, but I'm just wondering if there's thought put into, if it were implemented in somewhere like the US and adopted widely, how there would be possibilities to mitigate the cost to some people and how that might actually make them less likely to become river guides if they're required to have all these certifications to work in the first place.
I've done a lot of the courses I do are in really poor countries. Mm-hmm. The way that it works is that I will come to an agreement with a company as to how they're going to financially pay me to go in and run the course. Mm-hmm. And I will go in and I will run an assessment. Now, if I'm working with complete rookie guides who are not going to be able to, that don't have the experience or the river time to pass an assessment at the end of the week, they'll get a provisional guide status, which means that you can go onto the IRF website. You can, on the website of the IRF, we have a database that's available for anybody to see, and you can see every IRF qualified RAF guide. And a provisional RAF guide gets their name on there and they get a certificate.
Oh, great.
A guide that passes, and there's no cost for that. They only have to pay the tuition fees to the instructor. And the instructors are allowed to create our own fees.
Oh, wow.
If a guide passes a IRF assessment, they have to then pay a $60 administration fee. Yeah. And that's collected by the instructor, and that goes direct to the IRF. So for that $60, they get their certificate, which is valid for 3 years. To revalidate after 3 years, they must provide an up-to-date first aid certificate and a logbook showing that they've completed more than 10 trips, and that costs $25 every 3 years to recertify.
That's very reasonable.
It's $60.
$60. I mean, it's reasonable. A guide in the United States is still annoyed by that. Like, if they were to do that, that's money. But imagine living in India, where $60 is a lot of money, or Nepal, or most of these third world countries. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. I've done courses where, you know, it's been a big issue on the course. So you have to look as an instructor. And what I try to balance off nowadays is I'll run courses in you know, more developed Western countries where I'll make my money, and then maybe when I go into a developed country, I won't charge so much to soften the blow, and then therefore they can afford the assessment fee a little bit more. Yeah. When they pay that $60, they get a PDF certificate, and they also get an ID card with a photo ID card with a picture of them and their qualification on. Mm-hmm. And then every 3 years, it costs them $25 to renew.
Yeah.
And that's at guide level. And then the higher you go through the system, obviously the costs go up. So for instance, for a trip leader, it's $90, and an instructor, it's $150. Mm. What I like is if I go to a country and I have somebody that's a guide and they pass a safety kayak certificate, that's two sets of award fees. So what the IRF have done is if you pass a guide award, you pay $60, and then anything else on top of that, you pay $15. So if you go and you get a safety kayak certificate and a raft guide certificate, the most you pay is $75.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking about how much money one like wilderness first responder class cost and how much it costs to renew that. And I'm like, exactly. I would happily pay $90 to have that.
I'm going to Knowles next year, and I'm going to go and do my first responder instructors. And I'm just looking at the money for that.
It's nuts. Yeah. And there's not even a lot of, like, when I was taking a lot of these classes, I was a student and just searching for, like, is there any, like, scholarships? And, you know, there's some things, but it's so cost inhibitive for a lot of people trying to do those types of courses. And I don't think your cost structure is at all that way. And I really like the ability for the instructors to kind of use their discretion in terms of, you know, I know that these people can't afford this, but I still want to provide the service type of deal, where a lot of other programs don't have that flexibility.
I'm doing a lot of work at the moment in the country of Georgia, and they just paid this year for me to go in there for 10 days and run an intense IRF workshop for 10 days. Mm-hmm. And that was all funded. That was all paid for.
Wow.
By the US government.
Nice. <Wow. laughs> We're doing something good.
So I think for the poorer countries, and you know, let's be honest, these are the countries that necessarily they don't need the certificates, but they need the training.
Right.
It's the guys that need the training. So, you know, most people at the end, I think a lot of westernized people at the end, they want the certificate. A lot of countries you go to, and if you can pre-warn the guides, hey, you might not get a certificate this week, but you're going to get some training that's going to seriously improve the safety of your company.
Mark, what do you do more of? Do you do more training people or checking out their current skills?
It's a mix. To go and do a straight IRF assessment, if it's a guide assessment, it takes two days on the river. And, you know, no matter where you go in the world, if you put somebody through a two-day assessment, there is a guide that will fall short in one area. So the way I teach my courses, I structure my courses over a 3 or a 4 day, and there will be a mixture of coaching leading into assessing. And I'll do it that way. So, for instance, a lot of guides that work on big volume rivers, you know, you'll go, and part of the IRF assessment is that they'll have to do a rope work assessment. And you'll sit them down and you'll ask them to tie a series of mechanical advantage rope systems. And because they work on big volume, they won't do it. So if I was to go there and just run an assessment, and they've paid for me to go and run an assessment, it would mean that I would have to fail them all on the rope work, which is not what it's not what I'm there to do. I want them to get a certificate. I want them to progress. So then I have to go back and do some teaching. Then maybe the next day or the day after, then I can assess them. So it's a mixture of assessing and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I know you teach Swiftwater Rescue through Rescue 3. Do you think And if you look at a guide who's a new guide, like a class 2 or 3 guide, do you think that it's more important to teach them to be better guides or to teach them rescue techniques?
I think so. Obviously it's avoid everything, really.
Yeah.
Definitely want to teach them to be a good guide. So the way the beauty of what I do is being able to teach Rescue 3 and IRF. I will typically do a five or six day course, and I'll do a Rescue 3 whitewater rescue technician, and then I'll do an IRF workshop on the end of that. So if they're a class 2-3 guide, they've just gone through 3 days of river rescue, and then they're going to go through 3 days of guiding assessments. So you're preparing them. But yeah, I definitely think with the guide, if we can teach them some good core guiding skills, you know, hopefully they won't have to do too much rescue stuff. But it's good to be able to, you know, make them a good all-round guide and teach them the rescue.
Yeah.
When I travel to other countries and see river guides that from third world countries especially, a lot of them been taught SOTAR rescue, which is cool, but on river they're awful. And they're making bad safety decisions on the river with their boat spacing or other things, but they know how to like set up a 3-to-1, or they know how to, you know, do certain things with a throw bag, which is interesting to me. I've always thought we should focus on guiding skills and on river safety before swiftwater rescue.
Absolutely. And you go to a lot of places and they say, yeah, I'm a rough guide, I've got my Rescue 3. Yeah. But Rescue 3 doesn't actually teach anything, you know. But saying the flip side of that is I've worked with a lot of Nepalese guides who can go on a river and they can put a boat absolutely anywhere. As soon as it goes wrong, there can be problems. Many years ago, it used to be like that. Now the standard's a lot higher. Mm. There used to be problems. No, it's not so bad.
I want to get back a little bit to IRF in the United States, because I think that was an interesting topic. And people here don't know what it is. If you ask most river guides, I'd say only 3% even know what the IRF is. And I, as an outfitter, don't want more regulation. I don't want more certifications. I don't want to have my guides all be IRF certified. So personally, I'd prefer if the certification wasn't a thing in the U.S. What do you think about that? Do you think we should have it, or do you like it for guides in the U.S. that want to just travel internationally? How do you kind of stand on that? And I'm saying this from a selfish perspective, right? You know, you can tell me whatever you want. I'm just saying, when I look at, wow, like my guides need to have swiftwater rescue training, they have to have water and a first responder, now they have to be International Rafting Federation certified, and I have to license them in their states. It's just a lot. And CPR. It's just a ridiculous amount of work the guides have to go through. And so I want to, you know, once in a while, like most of my guides have all those things, right? But once in a while, I need to hire somebody to fill in for a trip and they don't have a wilderness first responder. And I can't find anybody that does. It's nice that I'm not required by some agency to have that. And for me, I'd rather not require them to have that training. I'd rather encourage them to have it. That's kind of what I'm going to get at. But I want to know your honest opinion. Like, what do you think? Do you think we should institute it, or does my like kind of laissez-faire attitude make some sense?
Can I sit on the wall?
You can.
I agree. I totally agree with both sides of what you have there. You know, can I, as a responsible outfitter, I've seen your podcast, I've listened to your podcast, I've seen your website, I know that you're a genuine guy. I can go to some countries and the owner of the company has never been in a raft himself and is a businessman.
I'm with you. I've seen some sketchy things in other countries, some really sketchy things, and so I completely see the value in other countries. I would say there's only a handful of sketchy outfitters in the U.S. that I know of. And so I feel like we're doing a pretty good job here. So just specifically to the U.S., do you think that we should move towards instituting it or not?
Would you ever get the whole of the U.S.? Would somebody stand up and say, right, every raft guide has to have an IRF certificate? I don't think that would ever happen in the U.S.
Yeah. But do you think we should? It's not realistic, but do you think we should?
No. No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. But what you're saying,
it's good to be able to deliver a standard of training and to be able to offer the training and have it. I don't think it would be amazing if you could get to the point where somebody set up and said, right, everybody in this country has to have an IRF certificate. I don't think that will ever happen.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's crazy. We would fight it. I would fight it. But but I see the value in it too. I would fight it just from a, you know, almost from a – well, here's the thing. We all think that we're – every river guide thinks they're the best guide in the world, and they are all the ultimate river guide instructor. You know, so we already think here that we know what we're doing and that we – can teach ourselves, and I'm realizing that we're breathing in our own smoke, and that's Mark. That's why I'm bringing you in, because I want like a fresh injection of energy and new theories and new thoughts, and like I want you to share with us what's happening out there and some interesting philosophies. So I love the idea of people from the internet like yourself coming to teach courses in the U.S. and helping us raise our standard of training. I'm just worried about more paperwork for me, basically.
Yeah, and totally. And going on, like, the IRF is not, and going back to this whole thing again, it's not a regulatory system. Yeah. Then it's not licensing award. All that we offer is a statement of competence for the guide. So this guide has been tested on class 3, can guide on class 3. It's not a license. It's a statement of competence.
Yeah,
but the value. Exact. Sorry, I'm gonna say one thing, Priscilla, and go. Yeah. Sorry, I forget things fast. I think the value of the IRF certification in the U.S. is first. You mentioned earlier, if you want to go as a guide and work internationally, you should get it. It just says I'm a competent guide. I can go to wherever and have skills. So I think any guide from the U.S. that wants to go overseas should get it. And also, if you really want to portray yourself as a professional guide, you should get it too. Like if you want, like any guide who's like, I want to put off that I'm a top level professional guide, I think it's a smart thing to get. Not that it's required. It just says a little bit about your own ability, your own interest in training. And it shows a sense of professionalism.
Yeah.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, some I see as well as I see guides that have been guiding for 20 years and say, I've been guiding for 20 years. And you say, well, what have you got to back it up? Show me something to back it up with. Like, oh, I've been on here for 20 years. They can't show you anything.
Priscilla, what were you going to say when I rudely interrupted you?
Oh, no. I was just wondering from, you know, a business owner's perspective, do you think that kind of, what do you be calling it? Basically hiring someone to do IRF certification would ultimately save you money in some of the training that you do company-wide? Like if you just brought in a third party to do all that for you, do you think in the long run that would end up saving money and helping you deal with just, you know, incoming new guides every year?
It wouldn't save me money because I do it myself.
Okay.
So it's just my time. So as I, you know, if I decide to grow my business, which I don't think I'll do, but if I do decide to, let's say I bought another company and got bigger, I wouldn't have the time to do it. And so then it would be easier to bring somebody in to do it just because I don't have the time to go do it. So for me, I'd rather improve my own teaching style, my own knowledge so I can teach better. And I think a lot of rafting companies are like that. They have, you know, those 20-year guides who have guided the South Fork of the American for 20 years who can teach the new people. You know, here's what we do with this rapid. Here's what we do with that rapid. The other struggle, I think, and I'm interested what you think about this, Mark, we mostly do overnight trips. So we're rowing gear boats. You know, probably 40% of our paddle boats have frames in the back just because to get through flat water sections or wind more than anything. And so does IRF raft guide training apply to multi-day guiding where a lot of it is just rowing a gear boat with three people in the front of your boat?
Yeah. You can, when we say raft, we're not talking, you know, it's not just about, you know, paddle raft. It's anything. It's center gear frame, rear oar frame, cattle rafts. It's everything.
And one other important thing to me for training our guides is instilling professionalism and kind of the soft skills, the off-river stuff. how much of that stuff is covered in the IRF training?
So we talk, when we're looking at the guide's personal rafting skills, we're looking at their crew management, we're looking at their interaction with the guests. So we have a whole criteria and a checklist. And basically a guide is scored from 1 through 5. 1 and 2 is a fail, 3 is a pass, 4 and 5 are a strong pass. And depending on what award you're going for, you know, you must make the certain standards. And from my own perspective, guiding, being a RAF guide, is 80, 85, 90% people skills.
Yeah.
10%. It's 10% the technical ability. So for me, as a RAF guide, you know, I like to say to when I'm teaching, are you a RAF guide or are you a boat driver? Are you guiding these people? Are you guiding these people down the river, or are you simply mm-hmm. guiding a boat down the river? That's one of the questions. That's the way I like to work. So, for instance, and I know you've been, Zach, I've been to Bosnia a lot, and I've worked on the Tara River. And there, they're all captains.
Yeah, skippers.
Skippers. And I can't stand the guides that give the copy and paste safety talk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they'll give a safety talk that has absolutely nothing to do with the trip they're about to do.
Yeah.
And then they'll go down a river and they'll just give their forwards, the backwards, and there's absolutely nothing. And that's the type of guide that I don't want to help. That's the type of guide that I don't like. I want to create guides to interact with customers that have got the people skills, especially for the guides in the up and coming countries, because they get the great people skills, they get to know the people, they get tips from that, they get to improve their English if it's a non-English speaking country. They get to make friends for life. Some of them might get to meet a future wife or husband. You never know. So it's definitely, for me, rafting is all about the people interaction. So on my courses, I try to really teach the people skills.
How do you teach that? Do you think that's something you can teach, or is it something that people have or don't have?
I work with rafting, and at this moment in time today, I've been out training snowmobile guides. And each year we take 20 snowmobile guides. And for me, I don't care how they can drive a snowmobile. I'm looking for the people skills. And I think, unfortunately, in this day and age, you can just look at people and you know if they've got it or they've not.
Is that what the assessment is sort of about? I think, you know, this is all news to me. You know, it's not necessarily training, it's assessment. So, you know, when you come over here to be with us, you're going to be assessing us. And so are you, you know, there's some people that maybe just shouldn't be river guides. They don't have the personality and the patience and the kindness and the empathy. And so you're kind of assessing them, saying, maybe you should just, you know, go work, as a cook.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you taking those people that shouldn't be there and making them river guides? Does that question kind of make sense?
Yeah, my course is it's training and assessment. And if I can see somebody's, you know, you can, unfortunately, and I you've probably seen this before, you can get someone who is technically a very, very good RAF guide, but they've got absolutely zero personality. And if I'm on a workshop and I see someone who's got the good technical ability and I can see you do that, I'm going to start to push buttons with their personality, and I'm going to want to bring out that in them. And the good thing about the feedback you get from the course is, you know, maybe somebody does have the personal skill. Maybe they do have the amazing technical abilities, but unfortunately, if they've not got the people skills, you might not be able to pass a course, you might not be able to pass the certificate because your people skills are not good enough.
Something just crossed my brain. You're going to assess me, which is interesting to me. And you're going to assess the other people in the course that we're doing. And I and other friends of mine think that we're the best guides ever. Like the ego of river guides is insane. And the fact that but I've never had to be assessed. I've never had that before. So the fact that somebody who, with your, you know, experience, is going to assess my ability really scares me. You know, because I think I'm a 5 across the board, and if I got like a 3 or a 4, I don't, it's interesting to me. I need that though. Like I need that assessment to say, here's where you need to improve as an individual guide. And I think there's a lot of guides out there that are afraid to take the class because they think that they're world class and they don't want their bubble broken.
Yeah. I think those guys that don't want the bubble broken, maybe don't need to get it broken. But I think sometimes those type of guides can sometimes be the dangerous ones on the river, the ones that think they're bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
And I think an assessment is a perfect time to push their comfort zone and push the buttons to in a controlled environment, show them where the chinks in their armory, where the little holes in their armory are, and in a nice way, you know, show some, hey, you know, maybe you need work on this. When I was younger, there's a very famous assessor in the UK who he wrote a whitewater safety book. It's an amazing book. And his nickname was the Laughing Assassin. he could take some of the best paddlers and tell them they failed. And they'd walk away smiling and laughing. You know, he would absolutely destroy their world. And, you know, but they'd come away laughing. So what I think is with these, if you're a good paddler, if you're a five across the board, you know, bring it on, show me. I want to deal with five. Somebody that's coming to become an instructor, as you're going to try and come, Zach, I want people to come in and say, I am a five across the board, because that means you're going to be a confident, good instructor.
Is anybody five across the board?
Never. Yeah. We're going to find something that you'll have to work on, but if everything else is perfect and I give you an action plan to go away and say, hey, yeah, you are a five, but you need to brush up on this. If you're a five, if you're saying to me now you're a five across the board, I know that if I tell you there's something you're not good at, I know you're the type of person that's going to go away and practice just so you can put it in my face. Oh, ha, look, I did it.
And this is the value I see in having you teach this class here, is that even people who are world class, worked everywhere, their guests all say that they're the best, blah, 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 we have an opportunity to try to get that five across the board, but we're not. And we're going to have some lacking thing somewhere, and a third party who's unattached to us, giving us that assessment, not a friend, you know, who's going to be nice to you. And then hopefully, I mean, I like to use your action plan. That made me excited. Like some sort of like, okay, to improve from a three to a four or four to five, here's what you need to do in your career to improve in the future. Yeah. I love that.
So for instance, I've been, there was a chap on an instructor course with me in March this year, and unfortunately he didn't pass. And he's been sending me monthly emails. And then today he sent me an email saying, I'm coming to Oregon.
Wow.
Because I want to come and do this course and I want to pass.
Oh,
so, you know, it built him up and made him stronger.
I love this so much. I might fail. Like I think I'm really good, but I recognize there might be some things I've just never learned and like weaknesses in, but it makes me better. Even if I don't pass at the end of it, I'll be a better guide and employer because I'll be passing on better information to the guides I work with.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to move on to one other quick topic before we finish up today. And, it's just throw bags. We've been talking about throw bags a lot, in the podcast, and I've been having a lot of side discussions with people about throw bags. I just want to ask your opinion about how they should be used, when they should be used. And I'm just going to fire off some quick questions that will help me learn, but also the audience. Should throw bags ever be thrown from a raft?
Depends on the river. I would say 90% of the time, no. I don't condone it. I wouldn't do it. For me as a guide, if I have to throw a bag from a river, it means I'm introducing 15-20 meters of rope into a water environment that could become that becomes a massive entrapment. It also means that if I throw a bag from my raft, it means that I'm no longer guiding my raft because I've got my hands pulling a swimmer back in on a throw bag. So for me, it's quicker for me to look around. If I'm working with safety kayakers, put my safety kayakers on it, but 9 times out of 10, it's going to be quicker, simpler, and cleaner just to paddle and pick the swimmer up.
Yeah.
What's an example of when you maybe would do it?
maybe on a bigger volume river, there's a customer that's gone into an eddy, and I'm in the main current. To save me that, I'd probably pop a bag into an eddy, pull them back to the raft that way. Unfortunately, in Iceland, there was a death last year of a customer who was paddling on a river where there was massive wind. The wind was going against the current of the river. It was only on class two. The distance between the raft and the swimmer became huge because of a poor safety talk. Mm. And if the guide would have had a bag, he could have bagged the swimmer. He didn't have a bag. The wind was that strong, he couldn't catch up the swimmer.
Wow.
What about, I think it was last episode or two episodes, we were talking about who should have throw bags. Do you think that every guide should have a throw bag? Not, I guess guide is the wrong word, because guides should. But, like, do you think every boater should have a throw bag with them, regardless of their training?
No, because there's definitely some people that are going to get themselves into trouble with them. It depends where they're at. I would try and teach somebody, be it a kayaker, be it a rafter, as early on in their career as to, you know, teach them how to use a bag. This is what a bag's used for. This is when you should use it. This is when you shouldn't use it.
Can you give us a 1 minute training? Just 1 minute when you should and shouldn't.
Okay.
For those listening and me.
So for me, when to use a throw bag, when there's a swimmer in the current and you are out of your boat. So when you're out of your kayak, out of your raft, when there's no chance that you can do a reach rescue or the swimmer can't get, you're going to look at your own personal positioning. Is it safe for you to throw? And can you safely belay that person to the side of the river? If all the answers are yes, 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 bag them.
Cool.
You see a lot of raft guides do a safety course, and there'll be a swimmer in the river, and the swimmer is a competent, happy swimmer. All you have to do is you have to look at them and shout, "Swim to me," and you'll get a trigger-happy throw bag, and the next thing you'll see a spider's web of throw bags going towards the swimmer. The swimmer is perfectly competent and happy.
Yeah.
The guide has thrown the bag, and then the swimmer's happy with that, and then next thing you see a swimmer coming down who needs that throw bag. The guide has already deployed his bag, and he's not quick enough to do a recoil to get that, and then they've got problems. So I would think the choice is, for me, the biggest advice is choose the right time and the best time to throw the throw bag and don't miss.
And do you have that's great. That's awesome. Thank you. I mean, those words are important, I think, because we've been having this talk a lot. Do you have a preference over waist belt throw bags and ones you would clip in your boat?
When I'm guiding, I wear a waist belt. I'm lucky enough to be sponsored by an amazing, amazing throw bag company. I have a waist belt when I'm rafting. When I'm kayaking, I don't like to wear a waist belt because obviously you go upside down, it affects your movement in the kayak. So I have a 9mm waist-mounted bag, which I use for swimmers. And then in my raft, I'll have a boat-based bag, which will be a 10mm rope, you know, 27, 30 meters. I'm not necessarily going to use for a swimmer, but it can be used for a haul line.
Awesome.
So that's why. Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. What's the company that you're sponsored by that you like? You think it's great?
I will bring a selection of their bags with me to the States. They're called WWTC.info, WhitewaterTrainingCenter.info. They're bags that are made in Europe. The chap that actually makes them is the head of the IRF GTE. And he was fed up of bad throw bags, and he's gone away. He's designed it, his own. He's designed his own braid of rope, and the system is just amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm fed up with throw bags too, so I love hearing this. I could pick your brain for hours, but we're coming up on an hour. Priscilla, do you have any more questions? Anything to add?
No, I don't. I don't think so at this time. It's been a good conversation. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, you're a really interesting guy, Mark. I'm excited to meet you in person.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting the walk with you guys.
So we finish up every episode with Gear of the Week. Priscilla, do you have anything?
For me, I had American Whitewater membership. Just putting that out there as the holidays approach. It's a good thing to renew for yourself or get for friends, because it's, I think it's $35 for a year, and it, like, the stuff, the money that is spent on membership actually goes towards keeping rivers open and making sure the information is publicly available to paddlers and updated on a frequent basis. And there's just not a lot of memberships that can support the sport we do in such a meaningful way in the U.S. So if you're in the U.S. and you don't have an AW membership, or you need to renew it, or you want to buy one for a friend, it's well worth it.
Every paddler should be a member. It just makes me nauseous when people are not members. It's such a well-run organization. They use the money well. They're constantly doing great things. And $35 a year is nothing. And just so being a member gives them weight when they go to Congress. You know, so when they say we represent 1,000 members, that's power. But when they say we represent 10,000 members, you know, of paddlers, they can get more done. And so the $35 helps them, but it's you being a member and backing them up that really helps them.
Yeah.
Good one, Priscilla. Mark, do you have any gear of the week? Did you want to, like, a specific piece of gear you want to throw in there?
Oh, you guys have got the American company called Blue Water Ropes. They do a 3.5 meter Spectra webbing flip line with loops either end, which means you can fit this flip line in your PFD and it takes up no space and no weight because it's made from Spectra and it floats. So it can also be used as a 3 or a 4 meter little throw line as well. If there's somebody, a swimmer close by, you can use it for a really quick pickoff.
Super cool. I'm gonna ask you to send me a link to that. I'll put it on our website and I'll probably get one myself to test it. That sounds cool. My gear of the week are Cocopelli pack rafts. I know I make fun of pack rafts all the time on this show. And I was at a trade show last week and met the two guys who own Cocopelli pack rafts. And they're just cool dudes. And they're just two guys who don't have – this is their job. And they go to China and design really cool pack rafts. And they're innovating. I'm a big fan. And just talking to them a little bit about what they do and where they're headed with their boats, I'm super impressed. And I don't own one, but I know I will at some point. I just want to give a shout out to when they look less like inner tubes and more like boats, I'm going to get one. They don't look like inner tubes now. They're actually some pretty innovative boats. So I'm a big fan.
It's a rising area of our sport.
Pack rafting.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And my general take on pack rafts is pack rafts were designed to cross lakes. And they're moving into whitewater, and whitewater kayaks are getting smaller and lighter for packing into places. And they're going to meet somewhere. There's going to be a convergence where pack rafters are boaters with experience and making good decisions, which they aren't always. And they're using boats that are properly fit for whitewater. But enough about that. I can go on and on and on. This is a topic I think about a lot. So that's it. Cocopelli pack rafts.
Hey.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us today and letting us know more about you and the IRF and certification and safety and all these fun things. We will post some information on our website when Zach posts this next audio or this next episode online. But I think that's it for us today, Zach. Or do we have anything else? Or
that's it. Thanks for joining us. Yep, that's a wrap.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Thank you.